This is the Real Life Runners Podcast, episode number 337, recap of the Daytona 100. If you're looking for ways to bring more joy into your running and you want to be a physically and mentally stronger runner, you're in the right place.
This is the Real Life Runners Podcast, and we're your hosts, Kevin and Angie Brown. Thanks for spending some time with us today. Now let's get running.
What's up, runners? Welcome to the podcast today. We are going to be doing a race recap because Kevin successfully completed the Daytona 100-mile ultramarathon this weekend. Whoop, whoop. Give it up for Kevin. I need to put some, like, applause sound bites in here.
Excellent.
I don't know how to do that, though.
I don't know how to do that either.
Yeah. So you get mine.
Thank you.
Yeah, and everybody else here. So congrats, Kev.
Thank you.
What an amazing accomplishment. I am so happy and blessed that I was a part of this as well. So today we're going to dive in to some of the details of the race because a lot of people have been asking a lot of questions and a lot of details about the race. So we said that we would come up with a podcast for you guys. So if you are not interested in Kevin's amazing feat of running 100 miles this weekend, you can just skip to the next podcast. Yep. Because that's what we're going to be talking about today. And today is really about so much. It's about everything that went into this race. It's about the mental fortitude, the grit, the tenacity, all the emotional and mental roller coaster that you were on, the physical roller coaster. We're going to talk about all the things, both physically and mentally, that you experienced during the race. We're going to talk a little bit about my experience as the crew chief during the race and what that was like, and hopefully answer everybody's questions. And if you have a question that we don't cover on today's podcast, feel free to send me a DM on Instagram at Real Life Runners. Hopefully you are following us now at Real Life Runners. And we just want to give a quick shout out to everyone that followed along with Kevin's journey, with our journey during the race this weekend. Everyone that sent messages of support, everyone that donated, we felt all of the support and all the love, and we want to thank you so much.
I mean, the support was just pouring in. The number of people that were following throughout the race, regardless of time zones that people were going into, it was crazy the number of people following along through, like, the wee hours of the morning. Some people were behind us in time zones, some people were ahead of us, but people were not getting a whole lot of sleep, and we certainly weren't getting much sleep, but neither were a lot of the people following and cheering along. If you lived far enough ahead of us in time zones, you probably could have fallen asleep, gotten back up, and still caught my finish, which would have been kind of interesting too.
Yeah, I think we definitely had people that did that. I'm not sure if they slept or if they just stayed up until, you know, 8 a.m. their time.
You gotta just go to bed. Yeah. It's gonna take a while. Like, that's the thing with the 100 miles, is it's gonna take a while. I've followed some of these myself, of some of the big, like, 100 mile trail races.
Yeah.
And I don't follow every step of them. I go out for a run. I went out for a long run in the middle of one, like my quote unquote long run. I was out for a couple of hours, and I come back and people are, you know, a similar distance along as my long run, and they still have 16 hours to go. It's nuts how long these races are.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy. So we want to start off today by just thanking all of the sponsors for Kevin's race. If you're new, if this is the first episode you're ever catching, we did, like, Kevin did this race, and part of his story is that he was diagnosed with epilepsy in 2017 after a series of three unexplained seizures. And so when he decided to train for this race, we were talking about it, and he decided that he wanted to raise money for the Epilepsy Foundation to help raise awareness and education and support for people with epilepsy. And so we started collecting donations, and we had 49 people donate over the course of the last couple of weeks, which is absolutely amazing. We gave a lot of our donors a shout out on the last podcast, but there were some donations that came in since that podcast. So we want to first start by thanking all of those people today.
Do you know where on the list we need to start in order to make sure that we've thanked everybody? Because there's a lot of lists.
Absolutely. So we're going to start off by saying thank you to Tina, Maria, Terry, Martha, and Melanie.
Thank you to Debbie and Sarah and Marion, Liz, Mari Chris, Michael, my mom donated. Thank you.
Thank you to Rachel, Sue, Desiree, Pilar, and Shannon.
And thank you to Lorena, Heather, and Richie.
Which is one of your students.
Yeah, it is.
Which is so freaking cute. Like, that was like one of the names I didn't know. When
I think you donated at like midnight, 2 in the morning. Like, when did that thing come in?
I don't know. I don't think it was that late. I think it was like noon on Saturday. I don't quite remember.
He stayed up all night watching me finish because he called it out when he came into class the next day.
Yeah.
He comes into class the next day and he goes, "So, bone broth in the middle of a parking lot, you say?"
That's amazing. So, I mean, the people on this list that donated, and that, I mean, that was a fraction of like all of you that were following along this in the stories and sent messages of love and support. And we just want to thank you so much. It's so cool to see all the names of all the people that were following along, people from teaching and coaching over the last couple of decades, from our lives in the past, like from, you know, when we were kids or when, like, family members and friends from when we were growing up. It was just really cool.
The number of different walks of life that support was pouring in from your life and my life, and just following along as I just go running down the street.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing how many people get drawn into a guy running down the street, which is kind of what happened.
Which is amazing. And we raised over $2,500, which is incredible.
Yep.
49 people donated. So thank you to all of you that made this possible and that really supported all of us, like definitely supported Kevin, but really supported all of us in this journey. We felt all of the love and all of the support, and we just thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah. All right. So let's jump in to the race experience and talk a little bit. So in our last podcast, we kind of wrapped up your prep going into the race. So let's talk about kind of the day before the race. Where was your head the day before the race? As we, obviously, we had a lot kind of going on. We had some personal things that we had to take care of before we left for the race, and getting packed up and getting on the road. Where was your head the day before the race?
I mean, I was good, but, you know, we had a timeline of this is what we'd like to do in order to get out the door and get going on time. And we missed, as we often do when packing up a car and heading to a place, missed by a little bit.
Well, I mean, it did. We had an appointment in the morning, and there was an accident where a truck had rolled over on its side.
Yes.
And so it took us twice as long to get home as we were expecting.
At least. Yeah. It was a long car ride home and a lot of traffic. And so then you were like, "Oh no, you can get in, like you can head out and get in a shakeout run." I'm like, no, let's get the car packed up and let's get out of here and let's just get moving.
Yeah. Cause I asked you what was going to be better for your mental health in that, like your mental state in that moment. Is it better for you to go out and get that run in, or was it better for you to just get on the road and go?
No, and the answer was, like, as soon as we can start moving on our way to the starting line, that was key. And, I mean, I think I, even on the drive, I was up and down with, like, my antsiness, which I think you allowed.
Sensed.
Yeah, well, you certainly sensed, but you gave me some permission to be a little antsy in certain times, and it's like, look, it's going to take as long as it takes to drive there. I could pick up the packet up until like 8 o'clock at night, but there's just something about like getting there. I was joking with, I forget, one of our girls, of like the classic, the airport joke of, well, you know, I got to the airport on time, then I had to walk all the way to the gate to make sure that it existed, and then I can go do what I need to do. Like now I can go to the bathroom and get some food. Like I needed to get to the check-in hotel because there was something in me that was like, I need to have the packet in hand so I'm ready to go.
Yeah, and that's fine, right? And I think that's really how I saw my role of the weekend, is really holding space for whatever you were going through.
Yeah.
And I think that it started the day before. I mean, it started months before, right?
That's true.
If we're being honest, my crew chief responsibilities really started a very long time ago, but that's really how I saw my role as crew chief, is really to help you attain your goal and do whatever I could do, obviously other than run, to make sure that you got to the finish line. And a lot of that is holding space and just allowing you to have whatever emotions you're having allow them to be there and then not let them just completely consume you.
Right. And I had a lot of emotions. I mean, I had a lot of highs and lows. And we talked on the last one about trying to be like level and even keel. And it's really difficult. Like you
mean during the race or before?
Yes. Yes. Both during and before. But especially during, like as you get exhausted, it's tougher to experience the emotion and to realize that it's just emotions and they're going to be temporary and you can move past them.
Yeah, and I think that anyone that's a parent or a spouse or a human has experienced that, right? Like, it's harder to regulate your emotion when you're tired, when you're fatigued. And so, obviously, the longer you continue to run, the longer you continue to completely exhaust your body, it's going to be much harder to regulate your own emotions in your own psychological state.
Yeah, I mean, just so we've got a timeline on this, we woke up at 4:30 in the morning so that I could have my pre-race breakfast.
Well, before we jump into race day.
Well, I just wanted to give a timeline here.
Okay.
All right, so woke up at 4:30 in the morning and I finished after 3:00 in the morning the next day. Like, even if I just did like normal activities, if I woke up at 4:30 in the morning, somewhere around like 9-10 o'clock that evening, I'm going to start getting cranky.
Yeah.
Let alone running the entire time.
Right. And you finished at 3:18, but we didn't get to bed till 5 a.m.
That's very true.
Yeah. So, okay, so let's back up a little bit. Friday, we drove up to Jacksonville, which is about a five. We actually made really good time.
We did make good time.
On the road, which was good. I think it only took us about 4-4.5 hours. And so we made it to the host hotel in time for the expert panel. And the expert panel was fantastic. So if any of you are ever doing an ultra race or any sort of race that they're having a panel of experts, it's really helpful, especially if it's your first time doing it, or especially if you feel unsettled or inexperienced in any way. And going to that expert panel, I'll let you talk about your experience. My experience of it was very positive because there is one thing that they said that will stick with me for any time that I ever, if you choose to, it definitely affected me this weekend. And then if you ever choose to do it in the future, this is going to be on my mind. And one of the guys who was the course record holder, the male course record holder, he said, as the crew, you have the hardest job, which kind of, you know, made me step back. So I'm like, running 100 miles is pretty much the hardest job. And he was like, no, the crewing 100 miles is the hardest job because it's your job to make sure that they get to the finish line. It's your job to make sure that they are safe, that they are fueled, that they are psychologically okay. And barring any sort of medical emergency, your job is to get them to the finish line. They are going to have highs and they're going to have extreme lows. They're going to want to quit. There's going to be at some point in the race that they're going to want to quit, and you can't let them do that. And I just had this flash of, oh, I let Kevin off the hook too easily at the Keys 100. And, you know, you might argue with me on that, and I'd love to hear your perspective, but there was a lot for me going on at that point in time because the first time Kevin attempted 100 miles, I was nervous. You know, I was scared about it. Like with Kevin's history of seizures and his, I mean, it's 100 miles for goodness sake. You know, like I was nervous and running at night and some of those roads down in the Keys didn't have sidewalks and you were just running on the shoulder. I was kind of relieved when you decided to call it quits. I was sad for you in a way, but I was also kind of relieved because I was like, okay, good. Now he's not driving at night. I don't have to worry that he's going to get hit by a car on the side of the road. And so I realized that I had failed in my job as crew chief because I didn't know enough either. And I'm not beating myself up over it or anything like that. But when he said that, it was very powerful for me that I decided in that moment, I'm not going to let Kevin quit. Like, I'm going to make sure that he finishes this race unless there's some sort of medical emergency.
Right. I mean, that's the key, is there is a valid reason to not make it to the finish line. If it is unhealthy like medically seriously unhealthy for you to continue, then you need to stop.
Of course, right? You don't need to be an idiot, right? Like, let's I mean, be real.
You kind of have to be a little bit of an idiot before you even sign up for the race.
You have to be a little crazy, right? There's definitely an aspect of crazy. But there's crazy, there's silly, which is the word that you use, which I love. Like, Kevin and I were going to bed the night after the race on Sunday night when we finally got home and we were going to bed. And he was like, he just looked at me and he goes, "That was silly." Which I love that that's the word that you chose, because it was silly and it was crazy and it was unrealistic. And I looked at him and I said, yeah, it was completely unrealistic, but it was also everything is unrealistic until you do it.
Yeah. Which is a beautiful statement. Everything is unrealistic until you've done it. And then you're like, oh no, that's entirely possible because I did it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think that it was as much on you in the last race. Like, you could say that you let me off the hook that when I said that I need to be done, because I had said I needed to be done miles before I pulled the plug on that race, and you kept me moving. You kept moving the finish line along, which is one of the other things that one of the people on the panel suggested, is when your runner comes in, they're like, oh, I need to quit. You're like, oh, okay, but we can't really do it at this spot. It'd be better if we got just a little bit farther down. Mm-hmm. So we'll meet you in like a mile. And then you could, that's going to be a better spot because of where the streets are. Like, make something up, because right. Your runner's probably not focused anyway. So you can make up and lie.
Yeah, they don't
and
know what's going on.
Trick them real easy that it's going to be better in a mile. And then when they get there and they still want to quit, then tell them, well, we tried to call the course marshal and they're just not picking up their phone.
Right.
So maybe if you run, like, just get to the next aid station and then we can do it from the aid station. And then when you get to the aid station, have everybody at the aid station lie to them and just keep them moving down the road.
Right.
So, and it's weird, but in the Keys, when I attempted this, I don't think that I had the right mental capacity to get to the finish line at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was not prepared mentally for that many things to go wrong. Things needed to go smoother in order for me to get to the finish line on that particular day. The way that I was mentally prepared for that one, I needed to get there with, you know, a couple of issues. Clearly, things are going to go wrong over the course of 100 miles. But if things start going, like, completely off the rails, I was not prepared on that day. And that, I think, is more than anything why I did not make it to that finish line.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what did you take away from the expert panel?
It's going to be awful, is a big one. Everything that I heard from the expert panel, I've heard from like ultra running podcasts and interviews with ultra runners and all sorts of things. There was nothing new and striking, but it's good to hear the words again, you know, just a few hours before you toe the line. Like, it's good to hear those things from people who are so super experienced, who are so good at it. Like, the guy who has the course record and the woman who has the course record, both of them were on the panel, and she goes, you know, when I set the course record, that was not a great day. It's not like I felt good for 100 miles. There were some bad portions. There were parts where I was like, ooh, my electrolytes are off, and I need to stop and walk and drink for a while, and when I finish drinking, I can't immediately start back up again. I need to walk for a little bit and absorb the electrolytes. And I still set the course record. And, you know, then she turned to the guy and she goes, when you hit the course record, did that go great? He goes, no, there were lows of that day. And that's something that you have to accept before the race starts.
Welcome to 100 miles.
Right. Like, it's a given. There's going to be lows. And like, one of the mantras, and this got me through many, many miles, is one of the absolute truths of ultra running is it will get better. There are various reasons how it could get better. You could DNF and then the pain is done. It could just actually start feeling better, which happens, totally happens. You could be feeling terrible and then an hour later you're feeling better.
An hour later.
I know, it's funny. Or you're going to get to the finish line and then the pain is done. Like, something is going to happen. And it will, get better.
I love that. And it's, you know, I was at a business conference by one of my mentors a week and a half ago. And that's one of the thoughts that they offered is like, when you are in a low, whether it's in business or in this case, ultra marathoning, this or something better.
Yep.
And I really, really love that because it's like, okay, yeah, this is hard. It's going to be this or something better. And that's a really powerful thing that I can remind myself of when things feel hard.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. And I mean, that one got me through, I don't know, 30 miles. And it's not like I just kept repeating that over and over again, but that got me through a lot of the lows is this will get better. This will get better.
And sometimes it doesn't, right? Sometimes it goes down before it goes back up.
Right. It doesn't have to get better quickly.
It doesn't get immediately better.
Like it's not immediate. There's no timeline in the statement, this will get better. And like I said, there's multiple ways for it to get better. It could get better because you decide you're done. Like I passed a guy at like mile 90, somewhere around that. And he was stopped and standing on the side of the road. And I'm like, hey,
that was
man.
The guy that I wanted to go help, right?
I passed two guys. That was one of them. And I don't think either one of them made it to the finish line. And I came up to the first guy.
Oh, my gosh. I can't imagine making it 90 miles and not making it.
That was the second
the
one. That was the
line.
Guy that you wanted to help. I came up to him like, are you doing okay? And he goes, I just threw up twice. Both calves are completely seized up on me, and I can't stand upright. Like, can you walk? He goes, I'm done. My ride is on its way.
Oh, like his ride was picking him up?
His ride was picking him up.
Ugh.
It wasn't like the way he said it so
that's
definitively.
That's heartbreaking.
Like, and this didn't occur to me at the moment because you're so focused on getting yourself to the finish line. But I would have walked with him for a little while.
Yeah.
Like I was fully prepared to walk with this guy for a while. And the way he just definitively said, my ride is coming.
Ugh. That's so sad. I mean, maybe his ride didn't pick him up. Like, there's a chance that the ride just came and, like, gave him stuff that he needed, and then he continued.
It's very possible that the ride had a driver and a pacer who they planned on just meeting him at the finish line.
Sure.
Because if you've done this repeatedly, a final 10 miles without seeing your crew is reasonable. I got to see my crew all the time because it was really helpful. It was nice to see you guys on the regular and you know, get some motivation along the way. But going 10 miles without seeing your crew and seeing them at like 80-something and then we'll celebrate at the finish line makes sense.
Yeah.
But maybe a pacer was coming back for him or they were picking him up.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's kind of go back. So we talked about the expert panel. We talked about kind of what you took away from it. What did you eat the night before the race?
We went out and got dinner. It was pasta dinner. It was like my go-to pasta. It's pretty plain. It's noodles and tomatoes and garlic and basil. It's delicious.
Yeah.
We didn't bring our own food. I know some people are like, oh, you got to bring your food, get a hotel that you can cook in. Like, no, just go to some place.
You can.
Yeah. I don't feel the need to. Like, go to a place that you're like, all right, I can eat here. This place is clean. And don't go crazy. Don't go adventurous on the menu. Go to something that you know that you can eat. And I avoid spices.
Yeah.
Not that I've ever had serious mid-race issues from eating things spicy the night before, but I don't want to try.
Yeah, you don't need to chance that.
No.
Especially on 100 miles.
No, it doesn't seem like fun.
Doesn't seem like a good idea. Okay, so we went out to dinner. We got back to the hotel. We went to bed a little bit later than we had planned on because we had a little unexpected snafu that got stuck into the schedule.
Yeah, so as we're filling up water bottles for the next day,
At the hotel.
I realize that I don't have my handheld water bottle. Like, I was going to make the stuff that we were putting in the water bottles electrolyte mix and get it going for my first ready to go. I was going to stick it in the fridge so it was all nice and cool when I started the race. And I'm like, oh my God, that handheld is in the bottom drawer in the kitchen. And it's not here. And it was, 8 o'clock at night? And I come rushing back into the hotel. You're in the fitness center filling up water bottles. And
no,
I'm like,
it was like 8:30, 8:45.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was almost 9 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm like, we have a problem. I don't have a water bottle.
Yeah. And so I said, okay. Like, it was my job to be cool and calm and collected and hold space. That was my job this week. And I'm like, okay, we'll figure it out. So I found a Dick's Sporting Goods. So we were like, okay, no problem. We'll go to Dick's. So we went to Dick's Sporting Goods. And they apparently had discontinued
running
handheld water bottles.
All running water bottles were no longer being carried in the store.
What the heck? Okay, we need to, like, you know, tag at Dick's Sporting Goods here and be like, what the heck? Because all the specialty running stores at 9 o'clock at night on a Friday are closed, obviously. And so they literally had one option left, and it was, they had to pull it out of the back. It was dusty.
I don't know how we didn't get on, like, crazy sale. Like, clearly they were done with
Seriously.
That.
Seriously.
Like, it was absurd that we did not get that.
It was regular
for, like,
price.
For, like, $5.
Yeah, no.
Because it should have been on super clearance.
No, it was $35 for that terrible handheld water bottle. But we purchased it anyway because Kevin wanted to have a handheld, and we said, okay, well, this is the option. We'll make it work. And so I had fully planned on going to a running store the next morning and figuring, you know, buying him a handheld water bottle and switching it out. But again, that did not work out either. Like, things are not going to go as planned all the times, because apparently there are some running stores in Jacksonville, and you were in Jacksonville starting at 6 a.m. and running till, I don't know, 7 or 8. And then back by the time that the running stores opened at 10 a.m., you were down in St. Augustine. And apparently St. Augustine doesn't have running stores, which is kind of crazy.
Right, but these small running stores, they don't open on Saturday early. Like, they open at 10. Like,
10 a.m.
That's kind of a given. I've worked multiple running stores. 10 is roughly the weekend opening time.
Which makes sense, right? Which makes total sense. But it was just one of those things that, okay, like, this is what's going to have to work. Like, we're going to make this work. It was a very Tim Gunn moment.
Well, yeah, that was why, like, the night before, I'm holding the water bottle, and the woman's, the Dick's employee there is like, are you going to get it? And it's like, well, yes, because I need a water bottle. Like, I need to have something. This is not ideal, but it's better than other options, which are not having a water bottle.
Right.
And then I saw another guy out there. He had taken a plain water bottle and, like,
a Zephyr Hills, like, plastic water bottle.
Yeah, and, like, somehow rigged up, like, a mini bungee cord to the top and bottom of it, mm-hmm. and was using that as his handheld water bottle.
There you go. He forgot one, too.
It was, I know, like, this thing was clearly planned and thought out. That's just how it worked. That's his handheld
just
water bottle.
Just a made DIY.
Yep.
All right.
It's pretty cool looking.
Yeah, so we ended up getting back to the hotel a little bit later. Because we thought, okay, we'll run over to Dick's, 15 minutes away, 15 minutes back. Like, we'll run in and out of the store. We just grab a water bottle. But no, they had to go in the back and find one. And then we walked around.
And talked to, like, 8 employees.
Oh, my gosh. And then we had to walk around the whole store. It was kind of nutty. So we got back later than we wanted to and went to bed later than we wanted to. But it was okay. Like, we got to bed when we got to bed.
Yeah, I mean, once I got back in, because I immediately freaked out that we didn't have a water bottle, and I came to you and I'm like, I don't have a water bottle. And you said, okay, we're going to fix this. And it took a lot off of me. And I'm sure that you were like, what the heck? Bring your water bottle, dude. But the fact that you were
But that would not have been helpful.
No. And that's not at all what you said. At no point did you make it seem like there was a serious issue. You were like, all right, we're going to get you a water bottle. And the next day, you're like, I'll see if I can find you a different water bottle. We can replace your water bottle mid-run. By the time we hit, like, 40 miles, I'm like, this is the water bottle that's getting us to the finish line.
Yep.
I don't like this water bottle. It actually gave me a small blister, but I don't think that any water bottle that I'm holding for 100 miles is going to not give me that little blister.
Yeah, 21 hours on your hand.
It's fine. But I couldn't get liquid to come out of the spout of it. It was a mess. But it's what it was, and we made it work.
It was better than nothing.
It was much better than
nothing. Like, it served its purpose. It was not ideal. It was not perfect, but it served a purpose.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. So we will not be recommending that handheld water bottle in our recommended gear and other things for you. So if you ever go to our little kit.co where we have our recommended products.
That one's not in there.
You will not see that one. No. So that was kind of the night before the race. All right. So the race started at 6 a.m. Your wave went off at 6. What time did you wake up? What did you eat? What time did we get to the race?
Woke up at 4:30, immediately started eating a bagel, and got myself kind of like put together and dressed. A lot of body glide on me straight off the bat, because I'm like, look, if I can get through this race without having to change clothes, that's a good move.
And honestly, like, he didn't change clothes. Spoiler alert, he did not change clothes or shoes. And did you really have any chafing issues? Like, you never really, you asked for body glide maybe once or twice during the whole day.
I asked for body glide. I did a good job in the morning. And then when it started getting hot again, I did it again.
Yeah.
But I rarely carried things. Like, the shorts are amazing, and I rarely had anything in the pockets of the shorts.
And which shorts did you wear?
They're Rabbit shorts. Mm-hmm. They're excellent. A phenomenal company. They make really good shorts, nice liner, and they have lots of pockets. And I think the only time that I've ever had any issues with those is if I put, like, a key in the back pocket. And the shorts don't cause an issue. It's just that, you know, the key bounces up and down. Well, I didn't need to carry a house key as I ran down the road.
Thank goodness.
So I was good to go. Yeah. I got a handheld water bottle in one hand and my cell phone in the other. So that's all I needed.
Okay, so... what you ate, what time you woke up. Like, how were you feeling getting to the starting line? I think I stressed you out just a little bit. Before we got to the starting line.
I don't remember. Why did you stress me out?
Because I was trying to take pictures and you're like, I just need to get to the starting line. I just need to get there.
Was this when we were still in the hotel?
No, when we got to the race. Like, you were a little anxious and because we got the starting line a little wrong. We went to the host hotel instead of the starting line because I thought that the starting line was right at the hotel.
Which is funny because you knew for a fact that it was not
I did.
The hotel.
Yeah, I looked all of this up ahead of time.
You had planned this the night before and then
fine.
We went to the wrong place.
And it's fine because we still were early. Like, we left with enough time that by the time we got to you wanted to be there at 5:40 and we got there at like 5:41.
Yeah, which is totally
fine. Good. But then we got there and you were starting to kind of just do some hip swings and get your body warmed up, and I was trying to like take some pictures and you're like, okay, I have to get to the starting line.
I mean, by the time I actually physically got to the starting line, I think I stood in the starting corral for 30 seconds.
Yeah, maybe.
Before they said, all right, and now you go. And you wanted me to take a couple more pictures. I'm like, no, they're counting down from 30 and I'm not in the corral yet. I need to go stand over there.
And the
there
girls
now.
Are like, Mom, let him, leave him alone, Mom.
Yeah, thank
Mom, we're done.
the older one, I was going to grab the phone from you. It was like, we're done with the pictures here. Dad needs to go be over
but
there.
But I wanted to document.
Of course you did, know? But I wanted to start the race.
Yeah, I know, which is good. And both are good.
Yes.
So you took off. The girls and I went back to the hotel. Had some breakfast, which was terrible, like a very very poor hotel breakfast.
Really? Because the one of them told me it was amazing.
Oh no, well, one of them made the waffles.
Yes.
But the rest,
whichever one made the waffle,
the rest
was happy.
Of the selections were terrible. I was not impressed.
We will not name that company.
No, we won't. So but the hotel was nice. The breakfast was just terrible. So the beginning of the race, first 7 miles, we could not crew you or offer any support. How was the first, like, 7 miles for you?
You run through this, like, quaint little beach neighborhood. Really nice. It's dark. I have no idea how the neighborhood actually looked. It's dark. You can hear the ocean waves through most of it, which is kind of cool.
That is cool.
But you can't see the ocean because it's 6 o'clock in the morning, but you can just hear waves crashing. There are, I don't know if these were people that lived there or people connected to the race itself, but this was, like, some of the most turning that you had to do. You went like straight for a little while and then you had to hang like a right and a left and a left and you had to like loop around a little bit. There was a water stop that was definitely people connected to the race, but they were just every time I had to make a turn, there was somebody standing there saying, left, looking great, which is just so nice.
That's nice.
Like, I don't know exactly who they were and it went past them pretty quickly. I think at like 3 miles, the one lady told me that I had to go to the right. I said, the finish line's just right this direction, right? And she gave me the good courtesy laugh, which was nice. But it's fine. You know, you do this little, like, out and back. It's kind of a loop, but most of it is, like, out and back. It's more like a drumstick. So you kind of do out and back with, like, a little loop on the end of it. So I actually got to see all of the fast people from the 5:30 start. run back past me the other direction, which was kind of neat. That was cool. Yeah,
that sounds good. And so then we saw you around mile 8 and we kind of refilled your stuff. And the goal was really to see Kevin every 30 to 60 minutes so that we could refuel and we could refill his fuel stores.
Right, because
and then check in.
Like, I have, like, the big backpack, like, hydration backpack thing, but I didn't wear it for a huge amount of the race.
You didn't put that on until almost halfway through.
When
halfway through the day, like, maybe 12 or 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
When it started getting pretty hot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I should have water with me at all times at this point. Because I was doing good, seeing you often enough, that I'm like, look, if I don't have to carry an extra liter and a half of water, let's not carry an extra liter and a half of water.
Right. And that was really the goal of me as the crew chief and trying to see you frequently was not only just to cheer for you and show you that we were there and supporting you, but also to minimize the amount of things you had to carry.
Yeah. And I was certainly well hydrated for the first many, many miles because it was cool. It was not super hot. It was not sunny.
It was nice and shady,
too. It was shady. Mm-hmm. It was plenty of shady. I was quite hydrated. I had to go to the bathroom badly for the first like 40 miles.
What did you do when you had to go to the bathroom?
There were porta potties regularly. Some of them were connected to the races. Some of them may have been just a porta potty in the front of a house that was under the construction.
Construction?
I may have used, I don't know, like 10 of those along the run.
I'm sure you weren't the only one.
Oh, not at all. Like, it was funny because once the sun started coming up, we're running down the road and I can see somebody maybe like a half mile in front of me. And I'm like, all right, just kind of keep a good rhythm with this person. And then that person would just disappear. I'm like, where the heck did they go? And I get farther down the road and I'm like, oh, there's the porta potty.
Yeah.
It's just where people went.
Yeah. So I would say that the first really 30 miles were good for you. Like,
oh, yeah.
You were feeling really good. Every time I checked in with you, you're like, yep, doing great. Like, he had a good mood. He had a lot of energy. You had a smile on your face. You were feeling good and ready to roll.
I was very peppy and moving. You, at one of the aid stations, you told me, you're like, you're rushing through these aid stations. And I was like, there's people around that are running similar pace to what I want to run, so I'm not trying to rush. I'm not trying to beat that person. I just want to kind of be near that person when I get back out and running again. And I had a rhythm going.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing, is you have to stop and get new fuel and eat and all the things.
Right, but you don't want to stop too long.
Right, because I had a very nice, smooth running form and good rhythm going.
Yeah, and I wanted to point that out because I knew that in the Keys, you said that the goal was completion, but the goal in your head was actually a time and a finishing place.
Yeah.
And I didn't want you falling into that trap. And that was part of my reasons for kind of pointing that out, of why, like, when I noticed that it felt like you were kind of rushing through and not just like taking your time at the aid station, I was like, is he mentally flipping over to I'm competing again?
Yeah, and I was not trying to compete. Like, I had, you know, we talk about A, B, and C goals. We've done this podcast before. I don't know how many letters I had. I had so many letters in there of, like, all the different things that could go well. Like, what if I, you know, sprout wings and fly for part of the course? Like, maybe this could happen. Like, there are all these different things that could happen, but you know, getting to the finish line was going to be a massive win for me. And I had really fully embraced that.
What letter was that one?
I don't know. There were a lot of them. I didn't do ABC goals correctly. I just had lots and lots of goals. Not like this was if things went great, and then if things went good, and if things went okay, if things went poor. Like, I didn't have like those things. It was just lots of different things that all would have been cool achievements.
Yeah.
But
so what were some of those?
Midnight was going to be one. Like, can I finish before the clock flips over? Mm-hmm. Would have been a good one.
Yeah.
You know, winning an age group, but that is completely out of my control. So
right.
I had that out there, but I had very, very little attachment to it because
yeah.
Who knows who's going to show up at this thing.
Right.
But that would have been a neat
like,
thing.
That would have been cool.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that would be cool. There's because the race is so long, like you get into a half marathon, a lot of people put like a 2 hour mark or a 2.5 hour mark. Well, you're running for 100 miles. So is it cool to hit 16? What about 17? 18 hours? 19 hours? Like literally every time it hits an hour is another like big achievement that you could be under.
Well, and when you were coming in, when I was talking to the guy at the finish line when we were waiting for you there, and he said, oh, he's going to be under 22 hours. And I said, oh, yes. Like, he's like, which wave did he start in? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, and, you know, he was at 6 a.m. He said, oh, yeah, he's going to be well under 21 and a half hours even. He goes, that's really good. Like, he just said that that was a really good accomplishment.
One of the reasons that people come to this race in particular, you have to, one, you have to like running road races. There's a lot of people that do ultras that try and stay off of roads. They stick purely to trails and stuff. But if you want to hit a time, one of the times that gets thrown out there for ultras is breaking 24 hours for 100 miles.
Yeah.
And so that was a goal out there. Can I break 24 hours? And I broke that one by a chunk. So that was a big win too.
Yeah. So we just talked about kind of the first 30 miles. What about like miles 30 through 50? Do you have any recollection of kind of what happened in those?
Somewhere in there, it started going poorly. And I can't remember exactly where it was.
Yeah, and neither can I. Like, and that's why I feel like when I think about the race, I really think of it in sections. Because it's hard to know like, oh yeah, exactly at 42 miles is when things started to go downhill. It was somewhere in this range because we saw you every 2 to 5 miles, essentially.
Yeah, and somewhere in there, it started going not well at all. From like a stomach GI issue perspective. And then that threw off my form, and then that made my legs get even more tired. And it was this quick physical spiral where it was like everything was going pretty smoothly, and it's not like things started feeling like not great. Things just started feeling bad. And that caught me off guard when it first hit.
Yeah, because you expected to kind of go more to like the place instead of the
Right, like I thought it was going to be like a dimmer switch. And instead it was like, okay, someone actually just flipped the switch from good to bad.
Right.
Like I thought there was going to be like a gradual dimming over the course of the day. And then maybe periodically, because you hear stories about this of like, I know I wasn't feeling great. And then I started feeling a little better. And then I wasn't feeling great. And it just suddenly flipped. And I just wasn't doing good at all.
And so then what happened? How did you handle that?
I don't know. I may have cried. I'm not sure. I definitely cried periodically throughout. At some point I would yell just on the side of the road.
Like up at the sky.
Yeah. Just yell. Not any words, nothing profane or anything. Just yell. It felt good. Like it really felt good. And then,
like a release.
Yeah. And then you just keep moving because it doesn't matter that it feels bad. Because the finish line isn't going to suddenly get closer because it feels bad. Like, there's nothing that my not feeling good is going to somehow fix. So it's just a thing that I have to deal with as I continue moving down the road.
So do you think that through this process you learned something about yourself and that you figured out how to maybe master or get a better handle on your own emotions?
Probably. I mean, I think I've heard the idea that like emotions are like weather, that, you know, is it raining? Is it sunny? Is it snowy? Which one's good? Like you have these feelings that come in and then they pass. And are they good? Are they bad? I don't know. They're just the emotion that you're currently feeling.
So when you were experiencing this emotional roller coaster during your race, how did you handle it? Did you just allow it to be there or did you fight it? Like, how did you handle it?
So fighting it, I tried both. And I know that the appropriate way is to not fight it, but as your race, the appropriate way, I don't know, the way that I've learned and all of this, the personal growth and all the things,
right,
is you can't fight your emotions.
Allow the emotions.
Just sit in the emotion.
Feel them.
But you're racing. And so like, I wasn't trying to beat people. So I don't mean that I'm competitively trying to do things, but you are in the middle of a race. You got a number on your chest. And so my response to most things in that environment is to push against it. you know, in the middle of a 5K, as things get tired, I push against it. I lean into the pain because that lets you know that you're running fast enough. So if the emotions are struggling, I push against them and try and like overcome the emotions. And that never worked. And I know, you know, outside of a race environment, that that's not going to work, that you just have to experience the emotion and then move through and move past. And many, many miles and hours into the run, when negative thoughts would come up, it'd just be like, oh yeah, well, that makes sense that I would be having negative thoughts right now. I'm not going as fast as I want. My legs aren't feeling great. My stomach doesn't feel good. I'm still holding this stupid water bottle because I left mine at home. Like, all these things are happening, and that's okay. I'm going to keep moving down the road.
Yeah.
And that was always a better way, because I had the negative thoughts, but they didn't then bring me down. And fighting against them almost always made me feel worse, which I know from like a book perspective, but this was a very practical experience of trying to fight the negative emotions only made me feel worse. And just knowing that these thoughts came in and then the thoughts can move out was always the shorter route to mentally feeling better.
That's really powerful. And it's very interesting too, because you've run a lot of races and you've experienced a lot of discomfort in your running journey, but never at this level for this long.
Never for that long. And that's the thing, is in a marathon, you're probably going to have a low. And that low might grind all the way to the finish line. In an ultra, you're going to have a low, and then you're going to recover and have a high, and then you're going to have another low, and then you're going to recover from that and have, like, the number of times that I went up and down during the race is a lot more than any other race I've ever run.
Right, because you ran almost 4 marathons straight. So your normal marathon experience plus, you know, times 4 essentially, but really, when you run a marathon, you usually run it in under 3 hours. Yep. And obviously you weren't racing this at that level of intensity. And so in theory, right, you running 3 marathons at your marathon pace would take about 12 hours. Did I say 3? I meant 4. 12 hours. And this took you 21 hours. So obviously a much different experience, a much different pace, a much everything. But you were just out there for so much longer. There was really no escaping what was going to happen.
Right. And I mean, I think that
you couldn't outrun it.
No. No, you can't outrun it. Yeah. You can't outrun your emotions. And I mean, I've tried that for decades to try to outrun emotions. And you can't. And knowing that and being like, but if I just keep running, eventually I'll have to outrun these things. And nope. 3, 4, 5, 20... 50 miles later, they're still there. So you just have to accept that they're going to be there. And that's the only way that you can actually move yourself along.
And that's so powerful, is that when you finally just accept it, then it will actually, you can release it. You accept it, you release it, you let it move through you, and then you're able to move forward.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that people ask all the time is like, what do you think about as you're out there? Do you just listen to a lot of music? I did not listen to that much music, actually. Because it was draining the battery on my phone. So I didn't listen to a ton of music. There was a lot of just me running down the road. And like, what are you thinking about? Not much. Like, I was just moving down the road. We had talked about this on the drive home, is it's such a chance to just be in the moment, because that's your best chance of success. Thinking about what happened in the last 10 miles outside of, I ate this, my stomach immediately felt bad, don't eat that at the next stop. Outside of that, things that happened at the start of the race are no longer important to me.
Right. And then thinking about the things that are ahead of you and how many miles you still have left, also not helpful.
Right. I didn't start doing, like, you know, runner math until nightfall. And then even then, I briefly did it and then I moved past it. Because it occurred to me that once you hit 100 kilometers, there's not another like significant distance that you hit until you hit 100 miles. Like, those are the race distances. You can hit a 50K, then you can hit a 50 mile, then 100K, and you're at 62 miles. There's not another big milestone until you hit 100 miles. And that occurred to me. I laughed. And then I moved along.
I mean, I guess 150K would be like 90-something. Sure, but no
one, right, but you're awfully close to the finish line at that point. No one races 150K unless that happens to be the random distance of the trail that you're on.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, three full marathons is kind of substantial, but that's a long distance from now. So, I'm just going to run until I hit the finish line.
Yeah.
Like, and then I was done doing runner math because it didn't help me anymore.
Yeah, and so it was really the ultimate practice of presence for you to just be in the mile that you were in.
Yeah, and presence for 21 hours is pretty awesome. Like, there's this race in New York that they just run around a city block for 3,100 miles. It's like it's days and days and days and days.
Oh, gosh.
And it's just running around this block, essentially. And they call it the Transcendental 3100.
No, thank you.
And I'm like, well, that sounds madness and kind of fascinating, but also madness. And they live stream it also, which is the best. But the presence, the having to live in the moment as I'm running, and then trying to expand that from day to day to day to day. And those runners sleep. Like, you get up at a certain time in the morning, you're done by midnight, get up and do it again the next day, day after day after day.
Okay.
But what a crazy experience. But how amazing and meditative that could actually become, because you can't be flying down the road. Like, the people that are moving fast are not moving that fast. It's just such a, huge self-growth process.
Yeah, it's that ultimate practice and presence again. And I think it's so interesting and would love your thoughts on why does taking your body to the brink of your physical capabilities lead to that kind of mental and psychological and personal growth?
Well, when you're at your physical limits, you're also pretty much at your mental limits. So you don't have the energy to put up these like mental walls anymore. Like, all the energy that you put on like shielding and creating these personas that you can put to the outer world. Like,
yeah, all the armor.
All the armor that you put up. You don't have the strength to carry armor anymore. You leave the armor somewhere in the early miles because it's too much to carry for the rest of the race.
How early?
I think,
like, in your race, how early would you say? Obviously, this number is different for everyone, but in your race, what would you say?
I mean, I think that my running really long distances is just, it's an open invite to drop the armor and be the most me that I am. So
honestly, that's one of the reasons, sorry to interrupt you, but that's one of the things I loved the most about when our oldest daughter interviewed you at that one stop, like when she walked with you. It was such a raw look at Kevin, and I loved how just genuinely yourself you were during that interview, and how you just let your silliness come out, you let your humor come out, you let all of it just kind of like be shown, and you don't show that a lot to a lot of people in your life.
Yeah, I have no idea what I said in that interview because
you should go back and watch it because it is amazing.
But the thing is that I didn't think about any of the answers. And that's a big key, yeah. I think, in being as honest as you possibly can. Like, how often during the day does someone ask you something, and before you just give them an answer, you think about, well, who am I talking to? What answer do they want me to give? What answer would I prefer to give? How do I balance between these? What's going to be the repercussion of my answer? She was asking me questions as I walked down the road. I just answered them.
Yeah. You put a filter on. And so basically when you're at that level of physical exertion and exhaustion, those filters just disappear.
You don't have the energy for a filter anymore. It's like, it's what you say when doing long runs with your friends.
Yeah.
Is after you hit a certain mile mark, there are no more filters on the discussions happening anymore.
Yeah, anything's on the table.
And, you know, we put a filter, I think, on our thoughts that we have inside of our own head. Like, all right, well, that's a bad thought, so I'm not going to think that thought anymore. But you don't have the energy to filter your thoughts anymore when you're 12, 15 hours in.
So do you see that as a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. I think that you have to experience all of the thoughts, maybe thoughts that you've been pushing down, and maybe thoughts that you're like, all right, well, I can't think that thought. That's going to be weakness. That's going to make me feel bad. I can't be powering through. But you can power through with all the thoughts. Like, whatever got you there, like, you're like, oh, well, that's a memory that I haven't taken into account in for a long, long time because it makes me feel sad. It makes me feel bad. It makes me feel bad about myself. If it's a memory from your life, that's a life experience that got you to where you currently are. So it has to be a positive.
Yeah. Did any sort of like traumatic memories pop up for you, or any of your history of seizures or any other like traumatic things kind of come to the surface for you?
Nothing big and or like nothing very specific.
No capital T trauma.
Right. Nothing like super specific came back up for me. Which I thought was interesting, you know, especially since we made a big thing going into it, talking about how this is showing that you can do what you want. Like, a diagnosis doesn't have to change the way that I'm training. Like, literally, I'm running more now. So I thought that I might get some flashbacks to it, but, you know, looking back at it now, it makes sense that I didn't have big flashbacks to those times because you don't form memories while having a seizure. So I'm not sure what I would flashback to.
Yeah, that's true, which is interesting because when I went to my event 2 weeks ago, a lot of what we did there, like one of my business mentors is very much into the woo. And so we did a lot of meditation and other sort of things, kind of bringing up visions and different things of our intuition. And I did get, and usually I have a really hard time, and obviously this podcast is not about me, but I have a hard time seeing the visions because in the past I have always tried to control the meditations, and I finally was able to release that need for control, and it was crazy how the visions just kind of started flowing in nonstop, like flooding in would be a better word. And I did have a flashback to when you had a seizure in our house on my lap and you were, you know, seizing there. And it was a very emotional thing for me. And I didn't realize that I was holding on to that, which was interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how that ties in, but like we were just we're kind of talking about bringing that back up.
But it's the whole idea of when you like, you've had a difficult time going through any of these visualization processes because you put a filter and yeah. Somehow you were able
and
to
tried to maintain control.
Right. So somehow you were able to take the filter away and give up control. There's not a whole lot of control over the course of 100 miles.
Yeah.
You lose the filters, you lose the control. You were in charge of what I ate. Like, I gave you some feedback on how I'm feeling and you're right. Like, okay, so this is what you're going
to
eat.
Yeah. I very quickly realized not to ask you questions. Like I did at the very beginning. I said, do you want this or do you want this? And then it was just like, nope, this is what you're eating. I decided at one point in time, I don't remember exactly when it was, that I was just going to give you the food and that's what you were going to eat.
Right. And you know, maybe if my stomach was feeling a little bit better, it'd be like, hey, here's what you're going to eat. And I might have turned something down and you'd be like, okay, I've got this also. And I would have taken option B instead. Maybe that might happen at some point in the future. But I didn't want to eat anything.
Yeah. And that's what I realized, is that I needed to take decision-making off your plate. It wasn't because I wanted to have control. It was because you couldn't do that right now. All you needed to focus on was just literally putting one foot in front of the other and continuing forward. And you did not have the energy, the capacity, or the what's the word I'm looking for, like the need to make any decisions. Like, that was my job.
Yeah. I mean, I could have made decisions on food, but I didn't want to eat anything. And so you deciding what I want at some point, kind of later in the afternoon, I think you mentioned peanut butter and jelly, and I'm like, yeah, give me that. And so then the next time I hit a stop, you gave me more peanut butter and jelly because it sounded good. And the next time we did it, I'm like, yeah, that doesn't sound bad, so give it to me. I think I was there enough that if you tried to give me something that I didn't want, I could have turned it down and you could have given me something else. But yeah, you stopped asking questions.
Yeah.
Like, one of the few questions you asked, we hit a gas station bath stop or a Circle K or something like that, and you're like, I want to get a Slurpee. Like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Let's do that.
Like, I really wanted you to, but if you were like, oh no, that sounds awful, then I'm not going to force you to do it.
But we had mentioned that the day before, in, or 2 days before in, yeah. in planning.
And it was a great way to get in calories and also cool your body temperature, because it was in the later afternoon and yeah. it was hot at that point.
Yeah, and we had discussed that. Like, that wasn't just a spur-of-the-moment thing of like, yeah. no, this might be a good idea in the afternoon. And, mm-hmm. and it was. It was a good one.
Yeah. So how did you get through those final miles? How did you get through, let's just say, the last 30 miles? Because at that point, you had already run 70 miles and you still had 30 miles to go. What do you remember and recall of kind of the last third of the race?
All right. So I remember as you get to like the outskirts of Daytona, which is probably like much more towards the last 20 miles of the race or so, you start passing people on the street who are like out at bars and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that's the crowd that you're now running past, and you're running through the sidewalk and people are, you know, eating dinner. Like there's outdoor dining. There was one place that I ran past and somebody at the first table yelled loudly as I'm kind of shuffling my way down the road, "How many miles have you gone?" And it was like the first table of maybe 10 tables lined up outside. And I looked at my watch. I'm like, "I've gone 82. And the guy yelled back, "82 miles. That's incredible." And the whole restaurant cheered as I ran past.
Oh, that's so cool.
Like, random things like that. There was an Uber driver that stopped and he goes, "There's some sort of race going. Where did you guys come from?" I'm like, "Jacksonville." He goes, "You did not." Like,
right.
You know, and then, like, just,
and there were those people at the gas station when we saw you
yeah,
at one stop. And
they were super excited.
Yeah, they were like, "How much have you run?" You were like, 81 miles. He was like, 3.1 miles. And you're like, 81. No. 81?
Like, yeah. So, like, anybody that saw, there were a lot of, like, random uh-huh. interactions with people.
There was.
Because you're going down the road in the middle of the night with a number pinned to your chest. So anybody that's done even, like, a local 5K recognizes that dude's got a number pinned to his chest. He's not just yeah. out for a run. Something's happening here. And if, you know, the people that are sitting at the restaurants dining outside, somebody ran by, and then 10 minutes later, another person ran by, and 15 minutes later, another person, like, what the heck is going on? Like, this isn't like a normal 5K. Why are they so staggered out? Well, because we started in Jacksonville.
Yeah. Seriously.
So I had a lot of, like, random interaction with people who would, like, just start driving slowly along or call out from wherever on the side of the road. It was weird. And then towards the very end of the race, you kind of get into like another neighborhood. And so then it just gets really quiet and dark. Like, there was a lot of really dark before I got to Daytona. And then once you get through, like, the downtown area, which I turned off my headlamp because I didn't need it. Like, it was really well lit. And
yeah,
then you get
so many hotels and restaurants and bars.
Yeah. But then you get through that and it goes super quiet again. And it's just like, you kind of get into a park is essentially what you've got. So you're going through, like, this small neighborhood and then into a park. And it was very quiet, and it goes back to that part about, okay, now it's just getting to the line. And there was a point where I wasn't going to be able to see you until I got to the line. Like, I saw you at 97, mm-hmm. 6, something
yeah,
like that.
Somewhere in there.
And then I had to get to the finish line. And
I think it was like 97 and a half was the last time I saw you.
Yeah.
At the 7-Eleven.
Yeah, but I think that, oh my God, the 7-Eleven. That's when having the mileage on my watch did not work well, because the 7-Eleven was supposed to be at mile 97 and a half, mm-hmm. and my watch said it was at mile 99.
99.7, I think,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, and it's like, well, that means that I should be
done
at the finish line.
Yeah,
but you could see the light from the lighthouse that we were running towards, and it was not close. And you texted, I was like, the 7-Eleven is supposed to be here by now. It's not cool that it's not here. And you're like, yeah, but isn't it cool that you can see the lighthouse light? And I'm like, no, it's, I did not text you back.
But
I was like, no, it is not cool, because I can see how far away that light is and I have to still get there. And when we ran through like the neighborhood to get to it, there was a street that I swear we could have turned up and gotten there faster.
I'm going to take some shortcuts in neighborhoods I don't know.
I mean, I think in order to do it, like, once I saw it the next day in daylight and with more mental capacity, I don't think I could have gone through one of those things. I think I would have had to, like, hop somebody's backyard fence.
Yeah.
But I could have gone a straighter path to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
You had to run through this thing all the way to the end and then hang a right. I actually pulled up Google Maps on my phone at that point. I'm like, how many more streets do I have to pass before I finally get to make a right turn? Because I'm like, I have to get to Lighthouse Drive. So I pulled up the map. I'm like, I have four more streets that I have to get to.
Yeah.
Like, it was really... I was fighting for every quarter mile at that point, and it was rough. I called somebody with like a half mile to go. She was running the 50 mile, and she stopped because somebody was waiting for her, and they came like running in with her over the course of like the last half mile. So that was weird. Mm-hmm. but it's like at that point, I couldn't even process what was happening. I'm like, well, they're not even allowed to have aid here. I don't know what's happening, but I'm just going to keep running and try and not get run over by a car because it was really dark, and just had to get there.
Yeah. At that point, it was just time to be done.
Yeah.
So what did it feel like to cross the finish line?
It's such a weird combination of amazement and relief and joy and utter exhaustion with this layer of pain blanketed over the top of all of it. In like the last 10 miles, I'm thinking, what am I going to do as I cross the finish line? Like, am I going to smile? Am I going to, like, throw my hands up in the air? Am I just going to, like, fall across the finish line? How am I going to cross the finish line? I knew I wanted you and the girls to cross the finish line with me. And, you know, then I got to you guys, and I'm moving so slow that I see you, and you guys are waiting, like, I don't know, 20 steps from the finish line. And I'm like, am I anywhere near them? Why am I so far away from them still? And I come up, and, like, you guys kind of grouped in behind me, which is fine. And
I wasn't sure, like, what you wanted. Like, if you wanted to hold our hands, or if you wanted to go in first, or, like, what kind of you wanted.
I don't know. And you know... We've got two sleep-deprived teen and tweens, and so did they want to hold my hand? Did they both want to? I'm sure you wanted to be next to me also. No one needs to fight over who gets to be next to the smelly guy that just ran for 100 miles. Like, that doesn't seem like a good way to cross the line. So it wasn't well-planned, but my being in front and then the three of you kind of like... to use the word from our wedding day that just popped in my head, ensconcing me behind, was, I thought that was great. And the guy, like, did you give him your phone? And he filmed coming in.
Yeah.
So that was super cool. Did like a whole announcing thing. There's no one there. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. There's a skeleton crew of support still there. There was a medical staff. It was a guy wearing a shirt that said medical. He came over and checked.
Yeah. And you were like, I don't need to talk to you.
Yeah. He was like, how are you doing? I'm like, everything hurts from my head to my toe, but not bad enough that we need to have an actual serious conversation. So we're good.
Yeah. And like, just the fact that you were with it enough to say that and make a joke about it, he's like, yep,
he's
okay.
He's fine. Well, that's when I had to stop and get my foot taken care of, the race marshal that was there, every time I was joking, because you were like trying to talk to him and like figure out like, is there anything else we should do? And I kept cracking jokes, and he was like, there's nothing else you need to do. He's fine. And he like, I think they had to go to the store, because like a mile down the road, he drove past me to check, and like they stopped. There were two of them, and they slowed down next to me, and they're like, how's your toe doing? I'm like, it still hurts, but it's a different pain. He goes, so it's a different pain. That's winning. Also, you're going really effing fast right now. And I look at my watch, and I'm shuffling like 10:30 pace. So I'm like, yes, lightning is flying out the back of me.
Like the lightning.
Yeah. But I mean, but it was a lot of support. Like, that was the thing, is there was so much support. You know, we talked at the beginning of the show of the support from all of our listeners, but support from other runners, support from you and the girls, support from every aid station and water stop, like support from random people eating dinner. Like, the amount of support and encouragement was awesome all day long.
Yeah. All right. This is ending up being a long podcast, but I think it's okay because everybody wants to know the details. So
you gave a good warning at the beginning.
Yep.
This is going to be a recap.
Okay. So you cross the finish line, you eat a cold hamburger.
No,
hot dog. You had a hot dog.
I crumbled into a chair, and then I had a hot dog. The hot dog was amazing.
Amazing.
I couldn't tell you if it was hot or cold.
Best hot dog you ever had.
It was a hot dog covered in ketchup.
And then I decided you needed more food than that. So we stopped at the Waffle House on the way home because
which was straight across from the hotel.
That was the only thing that was open at that hour. Got some food to go and then went back to the hotel. Our kids were done and got into bed ASAP. And you tried to put some food into your mouth. Like you probably ate half of that dish and then
I ate a lot of hash browns.
Showered. Yeah. And then showered and we got to bed around 5 a.m.
Yeah. And it was so difficult. I mean, showering was super difficult. My foot was all messed up. Like, I didn't even unwrap my toe, which got wrapped with, like, a marathon still to go, right?
Yeah, I want to say it was, like, 80-something.
Okay.
I think it was less than a marathon.
All right. So, with over 15 miles still to go, my toe got wrapped up. I'm like, yeah, I'm not taking that tape off until the next day.
I want to say that aid station was at, like, maybe 83.4.
Something like that.
Yeah.
It was... my feet were all messed up and I still had to shower and then try to climb into the bed and sleep. People have asked me, like, were you all like hyped up still? I'm like, well, there was enough downtime of like eating, getting into the car, getting the hotel, Waffle House, have some food. Like I probably could have fallen asleep in that chair at the finish line. Like I was excited, but I was also so exhausted. But by the time I was actually showered and ready to go to bed, I was done. I think it took me a half a second to fall asleep. Like I was done.
Yeah. You just had to like get yourself in a position that you felt comfortable enough.
Yeah.
That you could just pass out.
Yeah. And there was not a lot of positions that felt comfortable at all.
No. So we basically went to bed around five, just after five, and slept till 11 on Sunday. Because we had to check out of the hotel at 12 and then got some food, went to a local diner and then went over to the award ceremony that Kevin wanted to be a part of. He got third place in his age group, placed 14th overall. So those of you that are asking about the statistics, Kevin completed the 100 miles in 21 hours and 18 minutes. He placed 14th overall, third place in his age group, and is just an absolute rock star.
I mean, I finished. That was the big one. There's a lot of people that are asking, like, how did I do? And some people, giving them those details, like, means something to them in their head. And other people are just very supportive. And when I say, I finished this one,
right,
they're people that have been following. And they know I didn't finish the last one. And so finishing this one is a big win.
It's a big deal.
Like, the school president asked how I did. And I said, I finished this one. He goes, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, so that was pretty cool.
That is very cool. So how did you feel the day after, and it's now been the day that we're recording this on Tuesday following the race. You ran Saturday into Sunday, so basically you've had a half a day on Sunday and Monday, and today is Tuesday. How are you feeling now? Like, how did you feel the day after and then leading into now?
All right, well, Sunday was awful. It was a process to try and climb in and out of the car. Like, I needed to use my arms to pick my legs up to get in and out of the car. And then, you know, that night I was just trying to move a little bit because movement's helpful, but movement also hurts. So it's that combination of like wanting to have some movement and not get super stiff. That's the issue with the drive is I just got stiff sitting in the car and then we'd get up and like stop at a gas station or something. And the first 20 steps were awful. And then I could kind of shuffle uncomfortably, but then you have to get back into the car and, you know, I went to school on Monday and my physical activity was passing back tests to the kids and the movement, just walking and shuffling around my classroom and passing back papers, that made me feel better by the end of the day. Standing for a whole 45 minute period was too much. My feet started hurting. Like my toes were throbbing. I didn't wear real shoes. I asked for, asked my principal if I could wear flip flops on that day, but just standing for 45 straight minutes was too much. I had to take a break in the middle of classes, but I also couldn't sit the entire time because I was getting super, super stiff. So, you know, being at work, I think was a good balance for me. And now it's Tuesday and I'm walking normal. I can bend over and actually like pick things up off the floor, which I could not do yesterday at all. My feet are still messed up, but other than that, I feel fairly normal.
And what do you attribute that recovery to? Because I would say that's a pretty darn quick recovery after a 100-mile race.
despite the fact that my stomach felt so bad, I still think that I took in as much food as I possibly could have.
And liquid calories, too.
And liquid calories. When I couldn't eat something, I was taking in a ton of liquid calories. Then you got food into me afterwards. I think getting food in at the finish line and then stopping getting more food before I went to bed, I think that was key. So fuel was a huge part of it. And I think just, you know, accepting what my body was capable of doing. Like, I pushed limits, obviously, but knowing what I was able to do, I think helps also that I was able to get back and functional by Tuesday. Strength training for the whole year. Like, I could not actually march. I couldn't lift my left knee up by the end of the race. And I could kind of do it yesterday, and now I can actually do it again. And I don't think that I could have done that if I had completed the race a couple years ago. Like, I would have been out and done. You knew me when I finished my first marathon. I spent most of the next day laying on the floor of our apartment.
Well, your training cycle wasn't ideal.
It was not, but I mean, just the level of running that I'm at right now, to cover 100 miles and be able to, I mean, it wasn't, it's weird to say the next day because technically I finished on Sunday morning, but I kind of went to work the next day. That could not have happened, you know, 20, what was that, 20 years ago?
Oh my gosh.
20 years ago when I ran my first marathon.
Right.
I tried to get out of bed, my calf cramped, and I just collapsed onto a beanbag chair on the floor of the apartment I was in.
Yeah.
And I think you found me that afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. What a crazy and silly weekend.
What a silly weekend.
What a silly weekend. So if you had some takeaways from this race, what would you say kind of your top two or three takeaways would be?
You have no idea what your limits are until you set a goal that you think is beyond you. Not getting that goal does not mean you found the limit. It just means you can give it another try. That's a big one. Embracing all of your feelings sounds scary, kind of was scary as I was doing it, but was also amazing. Like, it was, the whole experience was just phenomenal. And knowing that I was so supported by you and the girls and so many people in our real life runner community and my school and so much support. It made the experience, it was just such an amazing experience. It really was.
Yeah, that's awesome. So the question that so many people want to ask already is, do you think you're going to do it again?
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't even hesitate that time.
It's been a few days, and it has not been that many days. I have no idea when. I don't know what race I'm going to do, but yeah, I think I will do it again.
Yeah?
I think I'm going to do it again.
This is going to happen again? All right. You've heard it here, I suppose. Are there any final thoughts you want to leave us with?
No, I think surprising you with the yes answer to that question should be a good way to wrap it up.
It doesn't surprise me that much. It just, you've kind of avoided the yes for the last 2 days. And so for you to come out so quickly and say it was a little surprising, but I'm not surprised that the answer is a yes at all.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that I'm actually functional and moving on Tuesday and seem, you know, no worse for wear, I'm good. I can do this.
Yeah.
And now let's see what else we can do.
I don't think your mom's going to like that answer at all.
Well, that's okay. I don't think she listens.
All right, you guys. Thanks for joining us. We know that this has been a longer episode than our normal episodes, and we hope that you enjoyed following along on Kevin's journey to the Daytona 100 and through the Daytona 100 and finishing the Daytona 100. So
this episode was not that long. If we went another 20 hours, then I could just finish the race again.
Wonderful. We're not going to do that to you guys. So thank you again to all of you that followed us on social media throughout the weekend on Facebook and on Twitter, not on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Real Life Runners. If you're not following us already, you definitely should, if not for some of the recaps that we're going to post up, but for Kevin's next apparently 100 mile adventure. So check us out over at Real Life Runners. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share it with a friend, screenshot screenshot it and share it on social media and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you haven't already. And as always, thanks for spending this time with us today. This has been the Real Life Runners Podcast, episode number 337. Now get out there and run your life.